Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week you will learn the secrets to running a business without the stress. Here is your host, Angela Council.
Hello there and welcome to this week's episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business. It's Angela Council here, your stress and lifestyle expert, and this is a Q&A podcast for you. So I have been asking a few people if they've got any questions that they would like answered, and I have got the answers for you today. So this is lots of different questions about health and well-being and lifestyle that I thought I would share a little bit of knowledge that I've got, give you a bit of my opinion. Obviously, this is all just my opinion. It's based on the knowledge that I have, what I've learned. If we're talking about medical conditions or diagnosed conditions, you must see a health practitioner, whether or not that is your regular doctor or going and seeing a qualified natural health practitioner. So just be aware of that, that the information that I am giving you is just general information. It's not to be taken as a diagnosis or a suggested treatment. If you do need to know a little bit more, you can contact me. So that's kind of all the, you know, boring stuff out of the way. But one of the questions that I got, and I got this from Hillary, and she asked me about when you go on holidays, what do you eat? And it's actually a very interesting question because a lot of people, and with a lot of clients that I've worked with, they get worried that maybe they're going to put on weight while they go away, and they've been working with me and we've been fairly clean with their diet and all that type of stuff, and they think, well, what's going to happen when I go on holidays? This is all just going to get blown out of the water. Well, it doesn't have to. Really, it doesn't have to, because, and it does depend on where you're going. I do know that. Because sometimes when you go on holidays, particularly if you go into, and I think this is probably more of an issue when you go to other countries similar to ours, so if you're going to places like the States, but you're in the really big tourist areas, and all they seem to have is this fast food and not really healthy food. And I know that when I've taken my family on holidays and we've gone over to the States and we've stayed in Orlando in Disney World, and we've stayed in Anaheim, and we've stayed at Disneyland. Yeah, I'm a bit of a Disney junkie, you might be hearing that. But sometimes it can be really difficult to find good quality food. But there are a few things that you can do to make sure that, you know, that you can make some better choices. So number one is just have a look. Just if you can stick to things like keeping it really simple, a piece of protein, whether or not that is a steak, a piece of chicken, a piece of fish and some vegetables. That's pretty easy for a main meal. Obviously for dinner, you could also do that for lunch. For breakfast, yeah, if you can, you go to a lot of these restaurants or these hotels and the breakfast bars are full of all these pastries and all of that. If you just go for the really simple stuff, you know, some natural yogurt and some fruit, keeping it pretty simple and not going overboard. Or even if you do want a hot breakfast, look at the things like, bacon and eggs or sausages and eggs. And, you know, they may not be the healthiest sausages, but they'll be better than going and eating all of those pastries which are high in carbs, which are high in sugars, that if you actually get some scrambled eggs or some poached eggs with a little bit, you know, of meat or some with that, some salad that goes with that. Sometimes they have mushrooms and tomatoes and things like that, so fill your plate with things like that. If you're going to other countries that are quite probably not so westernized. And when you're in those countries, then eat like the locals eat. Really, if you're going to some of the Eastern countries or some of the European countries, eat like the locals eat. Don't eat like the Westerners. Don't eat, you know, go and have the McDonald's and all of the fried food and all of that. Because to be honest, as Westerners, a lot of us don't eat very well at all. But look at the locals, because generally if you look at the locals, you know, they're quite healthy, they're not overweight. So what are they eating? And if you're in the Mediterranean areas and things like that, you'll just find that they naturally eat lots of plant materials. They will have some type of animal protein with it. And it's actually quite easy to eat well when you're in these countries. If you go into some of the Eastern countries, you know, the Asian countries, once again, they will have a very high plant basis of their diet with some protein, and it may be around fish, or they may have fermented soy and stuff like that. This is actually quite timely for me because I'm off on holidays very shortly, and we're going to Cambodia and Vietnam. And I have actually been told that fried tarantulas will be on the menu one night. I have an absolute fear of spiders, and I'm not too sure. I keep saying, oh yeah, I'll try it, but really, I don't know. But you know, when in someone else's country, you know, if you actually eat the food that they eat, then, you know, it's part of experiencing the culture. It's generally, it'll also be a healthier option than going down to the local fast food place, because, you know, most of them will have it. If they've got tourist areas, they will have the fast food, McDonald's and stuff like that. But really, when you're on holidays, if you eat what the locals eat, you'll be pretty good. Probably the biggest issue is when you're on holidays is probably about the amount that you eat. So people tend to eat a lot more when they're out and they're not at home, or they're not in their normal routine. So maybe they're having larger breakfasts, larger lunch and larger dinner, and then snacks in between. So generally when people put on weight, it's more to do with the amount they're eating as opposed to the type of food they're eating, if they're eating the local cuisine. And if you are on holidays, well, hopefully you're getting around and walking a little bit more. If you're going to a resort where, if you're a bit like me, you just like to lie around and lie by the pool and read a book, well, then you have to be aware that you're not going to be doing much, which means you have to make sure that you're not eating too much. So I would say that that's probably my biggest advice, is if you're going on holidays, relax about it to start with. Don't feel guilty, because when you feel guilty and get all stressed about all the food and everything that you eat, well, that just causes stress in your body, so you don't digest it. So that's a bigger issue. So don't feel guilty. You're on holidays. You know, if you're like the majority of people, you only go on holidays once, maybe, you know, twice a year. Some people don't even do that. So whatever happens while you're on holidays, you can always repair it when you come back, you know, so long as you're not doing holidays every single month. Eat what the locals eat, which will give you experiences of different foods and different tastes and, you know, different textures, and you should be okay. The big thing is maybe just watch the portion sizes. And I am going to talk about alcohol, but I'll answer that in another question in a minute. So, because that, I think, is what plays a really big role in lots of people's blowing of the weight and the diet and everything when they're on holidays, but I'll answer that question in a minute. So hopefully that answered that question for Hillary. Now the next question comes from Carmel. Is coffee good for me? And this question is so funny, because being a naturopath, you know, I speak to lots of other naturopaths, and this is actually a conversation that's come up on one of our private Facebook groups just for naturopaths. You know, because I have to tell you, I see so many naturopaths who are so kind of stuck with their coffee and they don't want to give it up. It's like, and you have, you know, prackies going, well, show me the evidence that that coffee's bad for you. I need to see the research around this. And it's just, you know, and then everyone has a big discussion about whether or not coffee's good for you or coffee's not good for you. Because really, if we actually look at what coffee is, coffee, or the active ingredient, which most people are concerned about, is caffeine. It actually does have therapeutic effects, and because it does change the way your body functions. So, you know, we do know that there are some benefits to coffee, and, you know, media is really great at sharing with you what the benefits of coffee. A study has been done to show this much caffeine will, you know, extend your life by 20 years, and you should be doing this and you should be doing that. So the media loves to put that out, and so everyone likes to hang on to that bit of research that says that bit of coffee is really good for us. But really, I mean, it's about the amount that you're consuming. Also, it's about the way your body is processing it. Now, one of the good things about caffeine, one of the things we know about caffeine is we do actually know its particular pathway of processing through the body, and in particular through the liver. And we actually do use caffeine when we actually want to test some particular liver pathways. So we actually do a caffeine load, and we can see which enzymes and which pathways within the liver are working properly and which ones aren't. So we do know that caffeine impacts the body. It's one of the reasons why we use caffeine for this, to actually measure liver function. So it's, as I said, it's to do with the amount. It's also how your body processes it, because caffeine is an adrenal stimulant. We know that. We know that caffeine is an adrenal stimulant. So every single time that you take caffeine into your body, what your adrenal glands do is they release some adrenal hormone. Now, if that's just happening once every so often and your adrenals are pretty much okay, then that's not going to be an issue. Your body can cope with that. Now, in previous audios and videos, or if anyone's heard me speak before, you will know that when I speak about stress and I speak about the adrenal glands, that there is a physical reaction every single time the adrenal glands, or our stress glands, release these stress hormones. So it actually changes the way our body functions, it changes our digestive system, our immune system, our reproductive, all of that. And you can go back and listen to any of my other videos when I talk about this, if you want to know a little bit more about that. So this means that every single time you have a cup of coffee, there is a change in the way your body functions. Now, some people really notice it because they're quite sensitive to caffeine. Some people will have a cup of coffee and their heart will start to race, or they can feel lightheaded. Now, this is just the way that their body is reacting to the additional adrenaline and cortisol, which are the stress hormones being released into the body. They really affect these people. Now, I will tell you, I don't drink coffee. I do drink green tea, but I don't drink coffee. So I don't normally get a lot of caffeine in one hit. And I can remember once, and this was many years ago before I became a naturopath, it was when these energy drinks were kind of first coming out, and someone on the street handed me, you know, they're doing this, they're handing samples out. So someone handed me a can of one of these energy drinks. I can't even tell you what it was. And I took about two mouthfuls. I didn't drink very much of it because, one, it was way too sweet for me, and two, I'd actually had about two mouthfuls, and all of a sudden my heart just started to pound. I got really, really lightheaded, and I'm going, my God, what's going on? Because I couldn't cope with that amount of caffeine. Also, I'll have to say that at that time I was highly stressed. I was working in corporate in those days. I was working on a project. I was working away from home. So I was highly stressed. And for me then to put that additional load on my adrenal glands, I really, really felt it. I have not touched a caffeine drink, a highly caffeinated drink, ever since. As I said, and I still don't drink coffee. I don't like the bitter taste of coffee. So I don't really take that much caffeine in. But I do know... Oops. Sorry, I just dropped my recorder. I do know that when I have too much caffeine, that it impacts me. So for you, it's like, so how does caffeine affect you? If you are highly stressed and you're using caffeine to get you through, to give you energy, well, then I would have to say coffee isn't good for you. Because if that's why you're using coffee, and I see so many women who are doing this, is they need a cup of coffee to get started. That's their breakfast. And then they have another one a couple of hours later because they need more energy. Then a couple of hours later and later and later. And, you know, by the time they get to the end of the day, they've had four, maybe five coffees. And this is particularly, this happens a lot when, if you're having lots of different meetings. I used to see this a lot when I speak to salespeople, because they keep meeting people and everyone wants a coffee. So for the person they're meeting, it might be the first or second coffee for the day. For them, it could be the third or fourth. So if you are already highly stressed, putting coffee on top of that is not helping your adrenal glands at all. It will be impacting you. And I have to say, the way to know how much coffee affects you is to actually stop drinking it. If you know that you go through a withdrawal when you don't have caffeine, if you miss a cup of coffee or miss a day in having caffeine and you start getting headaches or you start feeling nauseous or you're actually having withdrawal symptoms, well, then that has got to be telling you that caffeine is impacting your health and affecting the way your body's functioning. Because when you take it away, you start to experience all of these symptoms. So does that mean we have to give up coffee altogether? Not necessarily. If you are highly stressed, I do suggest that you actually start to drop down on your caffeine, but please don't stop it immediately because you will have a withdrawal impact and it will make you sick. So start with what I do with my clients when I'm working with people is let's go for a lower strength. So not if you're having double shots, let's go to a single shot. If you're normally having a large mug of coffee, let's bring it down to a regular size. So start to reduce the amount that you're having and the strength of what you're having. So bring that down gradually over a few days. And then maybe if you were drinking, two cups a day, go down to one cup a day. If you were doing one, maybe go down to one every second day, then every third day, and wean yourself off. Start to notice the difference between when you do have coffee and when you don't. Now, it's going to take you a couple of weeks to actually get, particularly if you're weaning down, to clear all of that caffeine out. And then after that, notice how you feel. So what do you drink instead? Because people, it is a bit of a ritual. Do you drink decaffeinated coffee or is there something else? I would actually say that generally, if people say to me, well, can I drink decaf coffee? Well, the question is, why would you bother? If it's the taste of the coffee that you like, well, then decaffeinated coffee might be okay for you. But if you're drinking coffee to give you the energy that you require, drinking decaf coffee is not going to be helping you because the caffeine's been removed. Decaffeinated coffee in itself has its own issues because generally the way they remove the caffeine from the coffee is a chemical process. But there is a more natural process. So if you can get a decaffeinated coffee that has been Swiss filtered or water filtered, that is a gentler process that uses less chemicals. So it's actually a better caffeine to decaf to drink. Generally, because that is a selling point, a marketing point, if a particular brand is Swiss or water filtered, it will be marked on the label. If it's not marked on the label, assume that it's not, that it's chemically extracted. And that is not good for you because we don't want to put a whole pile of chemicals into your body, particularly if the liver's not working very, very well. So then what we can look at, if we're not going to decaf, if you still want a drink, well, then there are different teas. Now, black teas and green teas and white leaf teas, they all do have caffeine in it. They have different levels of caffeine in it. Black tea has the most. Green tea and white leaf tea still have caffeine. White leaf has the least amount of caffeine in it. But what particularly the green teas and the white leaf tea have is that they have antioxidants, which are other chemicals which are within the tea, which actually help to protect a lot of the different body systems and your body cells. So there is a protection that comes with the caffeine that you get in these teas. So if you want to replace a coffee with something else, I would probably say go for a green tea or a white leaf tea. Now there's some I personally love white leaf tea. It's a nice, gentle, it doesn't have a strong astringent taste or anything. It's a nice, gentle tea. Quite often it can be mixed with, I drink it with rose petals. I also have another one I drink with lavender. So you can get some really nice white leaf tea blends. The same with green teas. Once again, I do. I generally only have one green tea a day, and the rest of the time I drink either a white leaf or a herbal tea. There's some fantastic herbal teas out there. Look, they're not going to give you the hit or the caffeine does, but if if your body's already stressed, it doesn't really require the hit. What it requires is support. So there's some great herbal teas, which are great for supporting the adrenal glands and the nervous system. Licorice is a fantastic herbal tea for the adrenal glands. Some of the teas for your nervous system are tulsi tea, yerba mate tea, chamomile tea, lavender tea, beautiful teas which are great for nurturing the nervous system and the adrenal gland. So there's some fantastic herb blends out there. So go out and try a few and just see what you like and just experiment. And, you know, and then you've still got the tradition of having a cup of something hot, but it's not giving you the impact on your adrenal glands that caffeine is. So try that. See how you go. Let me know.
Hi, sorry for the interruption, but I just wanted to tell you about our private Facebook group, Stress Free Living. That's where we have lots more conversations about reducing stress. I share lots of tips for you so that you can run a business, raise a family and look after yourself. So check it out on Facebook. Back to the conversation.
Now the third question is all about alcohol. How much alcohol is safe to consume? Now this is going to be a very, very controversial question because I'm sure nobody's going to like the answer. We in Australia are a very, very strong culture around alcohol. I would say actually that our alcohol in general in Australia is out of control, particularly binge drinking. And we see this all of the time. You know, we see people who are going out just to get drunk. And that is having a serious effect on our society, our cost of, you know, medical care with people who are turning up in emergency departments night after night on weekends because of alcohol-related disease incidences. We also have people who are dying due to alcohol, whether or not it's in car crashes, the fights that are going on or whatever. So here in Australia, and I'm sure Australia's not alone, many of the Western worlds and even some of the third world countries are having an issue with alcohol. But having said that, if we're going to be looking at alcohol in moderation as, you know, where it originally started, as a bit of a celebration and a community drink and things like that, is alcohol a problem? Yes and no. I mean, if we look at alcohol as what it is a poison to our body. So alcohol is a poison to our body. That's exactly how our liver sees it. And the way it processes it is if we drink any alcohol, it kind of downs all of the other body systems to process that alcohol to get it out of the body as soon as possible. Because if alcohol gets to the brain, it can kill you and it can cause brain damage or it can kill you. So as soon as you drink any alcohol, the liver goes into overdrive and it takes all the specific nutrients that it requires and things like zinc and some of the B vitamins, it actually uses all of these nutrients up to actually de-alcohol the alcohol and get rid of it as soon as possible. So the body doesn't really like it. Having said that, is having one glass of red wine, you know, when you're having dinner with friends, is that an issue? Probably not, because your body still has to go into that reaction to get rid of it. But if you've looked after yourself and your liver's working fine, it can handle it because it's not in overload all of the time. But if every Saturday night you go out with the aim that you're going to drink as much as possible until you pass out or whatever, and you're doing that weekend after weekend after weekend, or the opposite where, and this is what happens with a lot of women, and I tell you, I've been here, that when you feel stressed and you have a really bad day at work and you come home and you have a glass of wine to wind down, then maybe you might have another glass of wine with dinner, and then maybe another glass of wine after dinner. And then you do that every single night of the week. And that is very common for lots of women. I know it is. And as I said, I've been there as well. And that is a problem because your liver is continually trying to clear that from the body. So it's using up a whole pile of resources. So it's shutting down digestion. It's protecting the brain. It's using up nutrients to get that out of the body continually. And you just continue to put that load back in every single day. And this is why it's always recommended that you have a couple of alcohol-free days a week to allow the liver to do its job. I would actually switch it around. And instead of people saying, well, I'm going to have three alcohol-free days a week, why don't we swap that around and say, well, I'm only going to drink alcohol on one, maybe 2 days a week. And when I do, I'm only going to have one or two. And I'm going to do that as part of a social occasion. I'm at dinner with friends or with family, but I'm not going to be drinking it just because I've had a bad day at work, come home and have a glass of wine. Because it's really looking at everything in a holistic view. So, you know, the body doesn't like alcohol. That's a fact because of the way it processes it to get rid of it, the way it protects the brain. It doesn't like it. That's a fact, but it can cope with it if we're not continually putting alcohol into our bodies. So, you know, and if our livers are working fine, then that's fine. Now, one easy way to find out how well your liver is working is if you're continually waking up between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. in the morning, if you do that on a regular basis, it's a sign that your liver's not working as well as it's supposed to, because that's the time when the liver's basically doing a lot of its detoxifying. And if your liver's not working properly, it'll actually be putting toxins back through your body, which will actually wake you up. So if you notice that you're waking between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., then you've got to consider what's going on with your liver. And people who've got liver issues not just doesn't mean that they've got an issue with alcohol. There could be other things that have been affecting their liver, medications, environmental toxins, things like that. So the answer to the question, how much alcohol is good for you? Probably the truthful answer is none. But the realistic answer is, when you're drinking in a social occasion and you're only doing it, you know, on an irregular basis, once a week, twice a week, or maybe 1 week you have a few different occasions, so you're drinking a couple of times during the week, but it's when you're drinking all of the time. And look, I will, because I know that my audience is primarily women listening, I'm actually going to say the one time when it is not safe for you to be drinking, and that is when you're pregnant and when you're breastfeeding. Because know that every single thing that you put in your body when you're pregnant passes through the placenta to your baby. And there is no safe amount of alcohol for growing fetuses. There is no safe amount of alcohol. And it doesn't, I know that there's been lots and lots of discussions about, you know, all of this fetal alcohol syndrome. They don't know which drink causes fetal alcohol syndrome. It could be the first or it could be the last. You don't know which drink it was, and every woman is different depending on how their body is processing it and what's been going on. So there is no safe level of alcohol in pregnancy and breastfeeding as well. Once again, because you are feeding your baby, and you can do a bit of timing around when you do drink and when you don't drink. When you're breastfeeding it, you know, there is a timing issue there because how long it takes to get into the milk. But if you're doing constant breastfeeding, it's going to be going into your milk and it's going to be passing to your baby. So just know that whatever you put in your body is coming out to your baby. Is that really what you want your baby to have? So other than those particular times, the rest of it is honestly, it's know that it does impact your body, but understand that, you know, your body can deal with small amounts. That's what it's designed for. Your liver is designed to detox. It's designed to get rid of this stuff. And so long as it's working well, it will handle it. When it's not working well is when it won't handle it, and that's when you're giving it too much. So I think I might actually finish that today with those the three questions, and hopefully that is hopefully you found some of that information useful. If you've got any questions at all that you want me to answer, now I do have a few other questions. I'm going to cover a few of them off over the next few podcasts, over the next few weeks. Please feel free to just email me, angela@angelacouncil.com. Just put podcast question in the subject box and tell me what your question is, and then I can answer it for you. Now, if you want to find out a little bit more about what I do, pop over to my website, angelacounsel.com. angelacounsel.com. Go over there, have a look at what I do. You'll be able to sign up for a 14-day free stress-free living challenge, because my aim is to have every woman living a stress-free life. So you'll be able to sign up, get a few video tips on how you can reduce stress in your life. And honestly, some of the things are really, really simple to do, and they will make a massive amount of difference. So until next week, when I will be back with another episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business. Have an absolutely fantastic week. From my heart to yours, infinite love and gratitude. Bye for now. Thanks for joining us today on this episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business. As always, if you've got any comments, please feel free to leave them on the website, www.angelacounsel.com. While you're over there, you can also grab your 14-day stress-free living challenge. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more about what I do, why not pop into our private Facebook group called Stress-Free Living. So until next week, when I'll be back with some more exciting information for you, from my heart to yours, infinite love and gratitude. Bye for now.